The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for 2014's Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever. If you're worried about spoilers for this horrible Christmas special, then please watch this movie before listening to the following podcast.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should've got bad? I love dodgy creatures, but we wanna know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we wanna know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Irredeemable Christmas Special. A rather interesting way to round out the year by looking at some of the best and worst redeeming features movies that we've checked out over the year. And of course to discuss a rather questionable Christmas special involving a very grumpy cat, which I guess is a big giveaway. I'm your host, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend...
Christian Fletcher, but I'm not a grumpy cat. I will just give you a heads up about that. I'm not grumpy at all, Trevor, so hopefully I can bring some festive cheer to our Redeeming Features podcast. So thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure how festive we can be talking about some of these movies, but we'll see how we go.
Oh, I don't know. Honestly, I think even categorizing some of these as Christmas movies over actual movies, hey, stranger things have happened. You know, I'm looking through this list going, oh my gosh, I can't believe we've made each other watch these films. And I use the term made each other because, yeah, essentially that is what happens. it has been an interesting ride, but always good to be able to look back on what we have actually tackled this year and see if we've had very similar views.
Absolutely. So before we get into the whole redeeming feature side of things, and I will just give you a heads up, this is the Irredeemable Christmas Special, so when we get to the actual Christmas special we're talking about, we don't actually have to redeem it. That's a bit of a Christmas present to ourselves.
Oh, thank you, Trevor. Thank you. That's not our spoiler. That may as well just be our spoiler for what we thought of the film. But anyway, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Absolutely. But before we get there, I thought we'd have a bit of a look back and I can't say we're really awarding them anything because there's certainly no prizes going to any of these questionable movies we've watched throughout the year. But I thought we'd have a little look back and look at probably what we considered were the worst and the best of the redeeming features movies for 2015. So, as per tradition, we should really start at the bottom of the barrel, Christian. And I think I'll let you go first on the irredeemable side, and I'll take point on the redeemable side. So, for you, Christian, across the movies that we watched, now I'll do a quick recap. If you will allow me, this year we have watched the Garbage Pail Kids movie, Two of a Kind, Jaws the Revenge, Blood Rain 2, Sextet, Ishtar, Daredevil, DOA, Dead or Alive, Geely, Blues Brothers 2000, Glitter, Swept Away, The Wiz, Burlesque, Wild Wild West, Sucker Punch, The Apple, Jurassic Park 3, Batman and Robin, and Mazes and Monsters.
Ooh, that's a list of dubious movies if ever I've seen one, Trevor. Gosh. So,
hearing those names again, Christian, which one of those fill you with dread and which do you think is the worst of the bunch?
Now, this is interesting. Like, you have reminded me with the list here, but I was also looking at it earlier. And, yeah, getting a bit of a feel for it and trying to actually remember what I thought. And believe it or not, Trevor, a film that's almost, I suppose, innocent in comparison to a lot of the films on this list. It's Mazes and Monsters from 1982. Now, we only recently did that, but I think that would have to be the one where there was not one thing in it that I could redeem. You know, for a start, you've lost me on television movie, which essentially is what it was. But I'm looking through all these others, and at least there might be some, you know, there's some corkers in, you know, Two of a Kind and Swept Away and Glitter, for example. But I still always found something that was in some way appealing or some way to redeem it or, you know, and find some sort of interest in it. But Mazes and Monsters for me, you know, even the whole Tom Hanks starring vehicle aside, you know, I found Mazes and Monsters was just one of those biggest wastes space that we watch, but I'm almost feeling like I'm being quite cruel to it, Trevor, because we have watched some worse movies than that, it feels, but that seems to be the one standing out to me, one where it didn't even challenge me to be campier or, I don't know, at least if you're going to be bad, be a good bad, you know, but Mazes and Monsters just existed. And I hate to speak so badly of the film, but I really, yeah, that was one that just seems to stand out to me. Looking at another couple of other titles, I probably would say ones that probably I less got into were things like, say, DOA and Sucker Punch. But, you know, how dare I suggest such a film as Wild Wild West? You know, have you ever seen, you know, a more disgusting movie? It's so bad, you know. And then, you know, so, and it's funny how I'm looking at a lot of these titles and we're seeing fours and twos and threes at the end of it. And I'm sort of feeling like, hey, we've thrown in a few sequels. And as you know, I'm quite a bit of a fan or sort of have a bit of sore spot for sequels. But I really think that going in that angle with it, we weren't able to find a lot of very redeemable films. But I'm still looking through and saying Mazes and Monsters was the least fun to me. And I think that's what it is. A film has to entertain, and Mazes and Monsters just didn't. So, Trevor.
Fair enough. Mazes and Monsters is the most irredeemable movie of the year for Christian. Now, look, I'll certainly agree that Mazes and Monsters was terrible, for basically just plodding along and, just having these great long periods of pretty much nothing. But when it comes to irredeemable, I probably wouldn't put it that at the most irredeemable. What I'm considering of is what is probably the most repulsive of the movies that we've watched, which indeed is itself is still a pretty much a bit of a challenge. I did find Wild Wild West just with regards to a lot of its gags and repeating of a lot of its gags and just the wide range of deadpan to scenery chewing was interesting to say the least. Swept Away, really, especially in the second part where, Madonna and the other guy, who I can't remember, and I don't want to remember more than that, end up on the island, and just, let's just say there's scenes in there I don't really want to describe again, but there were scenes that we had to put a warning before our podcast on that one with regards to the discussion of those particular moments. You're probably not going to like hearing this one, Christian, but Sextet. I just felt so sorry. I felt so sorry for Mae West. I just thought it was, I honestly thought it was a cruel thing to do to Mae West, even though they were trying to give her, you know, a big hurrah to make up for her previous absolutely crash test of a movie. But again, that just should not have been done. But you know what? All of these pale in comparison to the movie that I was most revolted with out of the year, and that would have been Geely.
Oh, the, interesting.
The sheer obnoxiousness of Ben Affleck's character. I mean, this is a movie where I felt that whoever wrote it pretty much actively hated lesbians because the portrayal of lesbians in that movie, and the fact that, you know, they could be turned by a guy who has feminine hands, even though this guy has been nothing but a complete jerk to them for the rest of the movie, and also the portrayal of the mentally challenged character as well. So I'm just thinking from a point of view of the movie most likely to be sent for fiery damnation, and that's coming from someone who's not religious, I think Geely really tops it out as the worst movie we've watched this year.
Ooh, a big call, Trev, but I do actually, yeah, that actually is one of those ones that's quite up there as well. And yeah, one of those things where please not ever let Bennifer or whatever they called their bloody couple reuniting, please don't let that ever be a thing ever again. I think it was something that unfortunately affected film history, but it's something that, let's just put it up there with such lines as, you know, it's turkey time and say this really is a turkey of a film. So, Trev, I do see your passion, your hatred of that, but I still probably found something in that to be at least, redeemable is not the word, but at least something to kind of enjoy from it. So, you know, and I'm still going to stick by my Mazes and Monsters, but Geely is definitely up there with the horror one. Hey, I had to get it out of my system, but yeah, let's not ever visit that one again.
Definitely not. So I think it might be time to maybe get a bit on the more positive side, and if I may go first this time around, and we can have a chat about the most redeemable. Now, I've got to admit, it was a bit of a tough choice for the most redeemable movie. I didn't want to just go the easy route and go either of the two guilty pleasures of myself that I chucked in there. So I will just quickly do a quick honourable mention for DOA, Dead or Alive, and Sucker Punch, two ridiculous movies that I nevertheless find enjoyable. Where I think I really came through, the two that really stood out to me as probably the biggest surprises, and just movies I found that I found myself enjoying despite myself, it really came down to Jaws the Revenge and Jurassic Park 3. I did find them both quite fun, dumb action movies. And, you know, they had a good pace, they had exciting moments, and they just really were fun to watch. So I'm thinking that it's very, very difficult, but I'm thinking just for the technical prowess and just for the bit more frantic action, I'm going to put Jurassic Park 3 as my most redeemable feature movie this year.
Oh, great call, Trevor, actually. Yeah. No, I think, I think I can see. Yeah. And that was one where, and you hit the nail on the head. It was just fun, you know, and that's, you know, isn't that, hey, what film going or film watching is all about. So, you know, it's, yeah, I see, you know, and that was one that from memory we were very mixed on, but I think, I've had a lot of fun chatting about that one too, I remember. And, yeah, it's definitely, that's probably one of those ones that I would have thought you'd put under a guilty pleasure as well too. So I suppose we might be able to put it on that list now.
I think it is on my guilty pleasure list now. Yeah, it wasn't before I watched it, which is
Yeah. I think you should put it up there with DOA and Sucker Punch for things like that. But I know you use the words ridiculous about those two films, but it sounds like you have a lot more sort of, yeah, you have more of a good time with Jurassic Park 3, I was going to say 4 there. But, so yeah, no, I definitely think that was one of the good ones that was up there as well too. So, look, we've definitely pushed the envelope, Trev. Sorry, I hope I haven't taken the reins from you.
That's
fine.
I said my piece. It's all yours.
Because I'm very torn too. Because as you say, it's very easy to just, I suppose, fall back on the guilty pleasures that we've chosen ourselves. And I'm looking through, going, oh gosh, you've got, look at that. You know, that was something that I made Trev watch. He hated it, but I love it. You know. And I really pushed the envelope this year, I felt, especially the camp envelope. There was a lot of very campy films. We were able to push a lot to the whole pop star vehicle as well. That seemed to be coming up quite a lot. And I also mentioned earlier the whole sequel thing. But I think in hindsight, I can probably say that pop stars probably shouldn't do movies too often. That was one big thing that stood out to me. But in terms of, as I said, pushing this sort of camp envelope, you had Sextet with Mae West, you know, The Apple from 1980, and one of the more recent ones, Batman and Robin, actually. Interesting that I'd be bringing that one up. Trevor, we might be very very different in how we think about this, but I actually felt that this year was good for me, as I said, with pushing the envelope, but also to be able to get some of these infamous titles out of our system. Like, I managed to finally see Geely and Ishtar and all these, and Glitter and films that I'd heard about for a while. Not saying that my life was enriched from having seen them, but okay, Trev, for my next statement, you may need to block your ears, but after much deliberation, it all comes down to fun and enjoyment. And as I said, these are, you know, very much guilty pleasures in a way, but I definitely say, one of the most redeemable films, and one that I didn't think I would put on this list would have to be The Apple from 1980. Trevor, it is one of those films, and I think I've told you, it's one of those films that made me go, wow, I've become obsessed again with another film, you know, and I, I'm over it now. It's all good. But I remember that whole 2 week period between, you know, watching the film and recording the podcast. I think I watched the film about 5 times, you know, and that is such an insane thing to think about. And I think, yeah, it definitely is a guilty pleasure, but no, I just had so much fun with it. And I think being able to rediscover it, you give this film so much flack, but I've always loved the hell out of Sex Ed. I feel so sorry for it. I know Mae West was put through the ringer, but hey, love, it was based on your show and it's technically your movie. So, but then that said, it might have been the fact that she was quite delusional at the time and no one told her otherwise. But I think Sex Ed is one of those fun cult movies, you know, and it's funny that I mentioned earlier about, you know, that the whole camp films. Isn't it interesting? I'll be looking at sort of The Apple, Batman and Robin, and Sex Ed as being films that I actually was really surprised to enjoy, especially Batman and Robin. Once you got past the fact that Uma Thurman was just camping the hell out of it, it was actually something I'd much prefer watching than any other superhero movie of recent times. And that's actually a big thing to say about something like Batman and Robin. But it was just, like what we were saying earlier, it was fun. And that's why films like The Apple and Sextet represent to me as well. So, yeah, so on a very different end of the scale, but a very musical one. So I'd have to say, you know, those would be the three ones that I found more redeemable and more surprised about. But going a little bit off what I'd normally would think, I'm just looking at a couple of the other titles that, you know, you suggested as well, but definitely Jaws 4, I remember having quite a lot of fun. We probably had more fun chatting about it than watching the actual film. but I remember Jaws 4 being another one where I'm like, yeah, I'm actually quite surprised with this, even though it had so many bad elements about it. So I think our lists are somewhat different, Trevor, but hey, isn't a film about appreciating art, or if you can call it that?
Yeah, I guess it comes down. I mean, it is obvious. It comes down to what you enjoy. So, just to confirm, I kind of got lost in the middle there. So, what were you actually flagging as your most redeemable movie of the year?
Yep, still Trevor. I'd have to say The Apple, that terrible disco musical from 1980. I still don't know whether it's the worst film ever made or the greatest film ever made. It tugs that line the whole time for me, and I don't know if that's appealing to my sort of camp film sensibilities. So controversial, but there it is, The Apple.
That's fine. We're not here to judge. We're here to try to enjoy. So if we take anything from 2015 and our now standalone Redeeming Features podcast, even though some of these were done prior to it being split off. So essentially what we're saying is that going forward, anyone out there who wants to watch a good, bad movie, head for The Apple or Jurassic Park 3 and avoid Geely and Mazes and Monsters at all costs. Does that sound pretty good sum up for you?
I think that sounds like it. I even shudder hearing some of those titles again. So yeah, I would stay away from those last two. But hey, as we said, it's all up to people out there. I'd be interested to see if anyone has actually tackled these films this year and share a different view to us.
Yep, absolutely. Because of course we do want to hear from you as to what you thought of the movies we have watched. And in particular, if you have any suggestions for movies you think we should check out in an effort to try to redeem them. Of course, I'll just drop the email quickly now. You can head to, you can email us at therufusproject@gmail.com, but I'll give you the full rundown of contact details at the end of the podcast, of course. So there we go. So I think we might have a little short musical interlude of, again, questionable quality, because, hey, we can't really go for the good stuff on this podcast, can we?
Definitely. I think we may as well keep the charade up.
Awesome. We'll be right back.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I don't think Santa Claus will mind you. He won't have to use a dirty chimney flue.
And welcome back. I'm sure you're enjoying the lovely Christmas music we have found for you. Again, if you want to know more about the tunes you've been listening to, if you're game, I'm going to include all those details in the description down below. And that last one, which I always found quite amusing, after I found out that hippopotamuses can actually cause terrible, terrible injuries, and people have been attacked by hippos to the point where they've had their internal organs exposed. So, Christian, would you want a hippopotamus for Christmas?
I don't think so, Trevor, but interesting to know that a song slash the concept of having a hippo for Christmas exists. So, yeah, no, I think I'll be keeping that off my my Santa list this year.
Okay, fair enough. And believe it or not, that rather dodgy Christmas song takes us into the Christmas special that we're going to be discussing for you now. And we decided to check out Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever from 2014. That's right, last year. This has been around for less than 12 months. I think this is probably the most recent thing that we've ever looked at in the redeeming features.
Yeah, it almost feels like a new releases irredeemable features podcast. So yeah, it is actually quite interesting, but still doesn't mean that it's any more redeemable than other films, or it's probably going to be one of the worst ones. So I think it is good to be able to talk about something a bit more recent, especially something that kind of, we've got the whole Grumpy Cat phenomena and all that sort of the whole internet meme and then things like that. So I think it's all very relevant actually right now. So I think it's actually a really good choice.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of relevant. I do find it quite interesting. I mean, by the time this actually came out, the Grumpy Cat meme itself had pretty much died down. I mean, it was really probably 2012, 2013 that Grumpy Cat was a thing that was everywhere. And so by the time they finally pulled the fingers out and put Grumpy Cat on film, there really wasn't that much Grumpy Cat around. But why let that stop them?
Exactly, and I believe it is, I think it's Grumpy Cat Pty Ltd or something like that, but I believe it's pretty much the owners of Grumpy Cat threw in their jobs after this whole meme took off and pretty much dedicated their entire life to pretty much making Grumpy Cat this, I don't know, international icon, and this would have been definitely one of the ideas that was presented to them, and I actually think Lifetime would have come to them just on that cusp before the meme was dying to go, hey guys, we'll give you this money, let's make this movie, let's do it before everyone's over this Grumpy Cat thing. But yet, as you were saying, I think people were already over it at the time. So, but not knowing too much about the background of the movie, I'll be interested to see if you've managed to discover anything, Trev, because its existence confuses me. Let's just say that.
Fair enough. Well, for those out there, seriously, first of all, again, this is the Irredeemable Christmas special, so we're not really going to try that hard to redeem it. Any good stuff we found, we'll mention, if we found anything. But on the whole, again, just being able to talk straight and honestly about this thing is a Christmas present to ourselves. But first up, for those who don't know, Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever is actually a Lifetime Channel original movie over in the States. It tells the story of a lonely feline who's living in a pet shop and has a really sour outlook on life until one day, and I quote, a special 12-year-old girl falls in love with her. Go off to a good start there. So,
that's pretty much how we're feeling, I think. I think cat noises might be our way of judging this film. It might be our version of a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. But first up, well, there's not much, like, as most TV specials, there's no, like, budget stuff out there. But I guess we've still got a bit of turkey trivia. This has been released to the general world. You can get it on DVD and on demand, if you so choose. And it's got a grand total of 5.2 out of 10 on IMDb. I personally think that's a bit high.
Wow, I'm actually, considering some of the stuff we've watched, Trevor, that is a pretty high score for the quality of film. Yeah, I'm really surprised by that.
I think people are taking pity on it because, A, it's a Christmas movie, and B, Grumpy Cat is still kind of cute.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, I think that one might be too. They're more likely to give something a score like that than something like Gigli, so I can understand.
Absolutely. Now, trivia-wise, again, I couldn't find a lot of trivia out there, but for those who don't know, Grumpy Cat is indeed a female, as portrayed in the movie as a female cat, and her real name is Tarda Sauce. T-A-R-D-A-R. Tarda Sauce.
didn't quite have meme internet sensation written all over it, so I suppose Grumpy Cat probably is the title best suited for it.
And also the black and white cat that shows up in portions of the opening credits is a Grumpy Cat's real life brother, Pookie. So it was a bit of a family affair, this movie.
Wow. So the owners, as I mentioned, the push Grumpy Cat into all these things. They definitely were. They were keeping all the brothers and all that handy in any way that they could try and keep the I suppose the, I was going to say franchise, but keep the concept going. So yeah, I think they've pulled out everything for this.
Yeah, and I'm guessing the more of like their own pets they could put into the movie, probably the bigger their cut of the money from it.
Exactly, and just based off a lot of the dialogue that's used, you do get the feeling that this film is definitely trying to generate as much advertising revenue as possible. There's even a line going, where Grumpy Cat sort of goes off and thinks about, you know, this is how it should actually play out, but he goes, oh, hang on, it'd be a much shorter film with limited advertising revenue, and I'm like, oh my god, that sums up the entire mentality that must have been considered when going in for making this product. But hey, I know a lot of people think the same with anything about making film. It's definitely a profit thing, but this was them using their brains to try and keep this concept going even further. So good on them for trying.
Absolutely. Now, we will, even though we're not doing the full attempting to redeem things this time around, I think we should still probably start at the bottom of the barrel. And I have found a review of this movie that I think sums up some of the feelings out there for those who are not fans. The title of this review is Worst Christmas Movie Ever. I love cats. I love Grumpy. This is a very, very, very bad movie. You know how movies are so bad they are good? Not this one. It hurts. It hurts to watch. My husband may divorce me for making him watch it. 1 star.
That last statement was very, very to the point. So gosh. Yeah, I can see where they're coming from. Wow.
Yep. I guess that reviewer, not really a big fan of the company Grumpy Cat Limited, which was one of the first things I noticed when this started. Like, the very first title was Lifetime Films in Association with Grumpy Cat Limited.
That's got a big future. But I couldn't see around a lot of that, considering all that was distracting me was the flying cat on the screen. You know, having that opening shot, you know, that Superman thing, you're just like going, oh, at least, I don't know, is this movie just bad, or is it really, you know, is it purposely pulling out everything it can to, it knows it's lame, it's very tongue-in-cheek, and, you know, I think this is one of those things that sort of summed it up from that opening shot is, we've got a movie, guys. We're just going to do whatever the hell with it and hope for the best. And I think you mentioned with that reviewer too, yeah, with the, you know, this must be one of the worst Christmas movies ever. I felt that it was very much, it was any old plot they could come up with, in this case, set in a shopping mall and the bad guys are trying to steal this dog and I think it's the pet shop as well, take over the pet shop. But, so it's really just an opportunity for Grumpy Cat to be able to say all these comments and meow at the screen and really turn what essentially could have been, you know, 2 minutes worth of sound bites into an hour and a half movie. I honestly think that whole plot, anything involving humans, is really irrelevant. It was really just something to string it all together.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't take long to show that it was intending to try as hard as it could to be as self-referential as possible. Like you mentioned, with regards to the flying cat and a few other things, and you hear Grumpy Cat going, and yes, this is me and not at all a stuffed toy. You go, okay, great, thanks for that. And I think probably one good thing I can mention is the fact that having Grumpy Cat as a female cat, at least, because if it had a male cat and a male voice, essentially, you would have probably just thought you were watching some Garfield ripoff.
Ah, good point. Yeah, it sort of gave it that sort of, you know, hey, this is something we haven't explored before. You know, the whole, yeah, the female lead characters. I mean, lead cat characters. So, yeah, it's actually interesting looking at it that way, Trevor. And the fact that they choose it as, you know, yeah, a little girl sort of. Yeah, it's almost like they were trying to get in sort of, I don't know, the young girl market as well by having something relatable with a girl, you know, wanting to have this own this pet, but actually I don't think they even thought that much into it, you know. But the fact with it being Lifetime too, they've always got on the screen the entire time, #worst Christmas ever, but in case, if that wasn't enough, Grumpy Cat even goes out of its way to drop the hashtag any chance it can, drop anything to do with product placement, and like what you were saying, you know, I'll point out the fact that that's a fake cat. But so that was something that I at least gave it credit for. I know we're not redeeming the film, but I give it credit for at least it's knowing it's bad. But then you think, with a film that's Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas, how, what other angle could it have gone? And hey, it all says it all in the title, Worst Christmas Ever. So if already they're making the worst Christmas movie ever made, they've achieved what they wanted to, I suppose.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, you just got to mention with the human characters being almost irrelevant, essentially, is just an excuse to carry Grumpy Cat around this shopping mall into various situations so it can drop a sarcastic comment and just be completely, you know, disinterested in most of what's going on that doesn't concern it directly. But all the human characters, they all had like these really elaborate setups, and each character that was in the movie really got like a good solid amount of screen time, even if they weren't really that much of a major player. I mean, the mum and the guy that I assuming were that was meant to be the mum's love interest. I mean, they went into a great deal to set this up, but those two particular characters have very little to do with what happens in the movie.
It was like they were almost setting up all this stuff and they were intending this to be, I don't know, something bigger than what it was, or something that was going to end up being, heaven forbid, Grumpy Cat's worst TV series ever. I don't know. But yeah, it just, it felt like, but there were scenes where you were, you know, I think there was that opening scene and when they're in the restaurant, so with the guy, the young guy and the girl, and you literally got to the point where ever Grumpy Cat wasn't on the screen or making all these interjections, you started to go, why am I watching? Am I literally watching some daytime direct-to-TV? It just had that feel about it. And I don't know. It really made you kind of wake. You wanted Grumpy Cat to come back in and go, yawn, or its famous thing, which was meow every, like, 2 seconds. They definitely looked, that was funny the first time, but definitely, Trevor, I think they got their use out of him doing that. And then to the point where it would become him as a floating Cupid across the screen, and you just went, oh gosh, this seemed like it was so obviously done in Photoshop or something like that, or clip art. So yeah, it felt like it did set up a lot, really, for no reason. But it's hard to know what angle they could have gone with it. I think it was very clever having him as being able to talk, and the fact that the girl could actually understand, and the fact that the girl could hear her talking as well. I thought that was a really interesting concept, because I think aside from that, I don't know how they would have had much of a movie, because the communication would have just been not happening.
Yeah, so yeah, and outside of the girl and Grumpy Cat, and I guess the two rock and roll thieves,
they annoyed the hell out of me.
Yeah, the whole bumbling crook shtick with them got old way, way too fast, and then just kept on going downhill from there. So essentially what happens is, Grumpy Cat lives in a pet store, has only been bought twice and returned both times, because all it would do was sit there and look grumpy. And so the pet store owner decides he's going to get in this super rare dog that is allegedly worth $1 million to revitalize the pet store so that he can keep on going and obviously, I guess, run the pet store into the ground a bit more and a bit longer. And that's where these two bumbling crooks come in to steal the dog. There's a plot with a security guard and, there's Grumpy Cat. Yeah.
I felt retreads of like, what's that mall cop movie? It just felt like, I don't know, there's something, as soon as I see a mall cop on one of those, whatever they're called, mobility scooters going around a shopping mall, it just reeks of something I'm watching on, on Lifetime Channel, but hang on.
Well, there was actually a Paul Blart gag, leveled at that security guard at one point, and just went, okay, yep, they know exactly what that looks like, and yes, they're referencing it, because this movie is self-referential.
And that's the thing, every time there was any kind of setup or scene that was referential to an old movie or something iconic, they'd throw it in. I noticed that of a couple of others, I can't think of couple of the other ones, but I actually loved when Grumpy Cat seemed to, it was almost like for a while there, Grumpy Cat was actually in my head and actually reflecting what I was thinking at the time. I thought there was one part where I literally laughed out loud because I was going, oh my God. And then the cat literally goes, that comes on the screen and goes, this movie's awful. Are you still here? Why are you still watching this? And I was like, oh my God, Grumpy, you can relate to me. So I do appreciate that respect of it. But surely as they were making this film, they were thinking to themselves, hey, if we even have to question that from our lead character asking the audience, should we be filmmakers?
I know. That all that did, because it happened multiple times in the second half of the movie. I comment along the lines of, why are you still watching this? You're still here? Why? And I found myself thinking, yeah, just keep asking me that question and try to keep making me turn this off. I'm watching this for a podcast. Don't make it harder for me to keep watching it.
And especially when that kind of goes against the fact that a movie like this is obviously, they're trying to get as much product placement and as much advertising revenue out, as they've even said. So to try and almost encourage people to turn this film off, it's quite a strange concept. So yeah, but I think it was definitely like they went, knowing that they had was called the worst Christmas ever, it's like they knew, hey, we're not going to hold back. We are going to make this the worst movie ever. What I would have loved to have seen, Trevor, is actually we were quite, ended up being surprised by it. But no, I don't think they were going to think that much into it.
Yeah, I mean, I did get a couple of surprises in the movie. I don't know if I would call them good surprises. But first of all, they are quite honest about the fact that the Santa Claus inside the mall is a guy in a suit. So I'm thinking that any younger viewers watching this movie, it could lead to some awkward questions that the parents aren't quite ready to answer about Santa. Even though the Santa that turns up and gives her the coin so she can make the wish, which lets her talk to Grumpy Cat, etc., 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 he, to me, was... I actually almost laughed when he was on there, just the way he was doing, and then he jumps over the seat, and she looks over and goes, I can still see you, you know? He just goes, no, you can't, I'm magical. That was actually almost funny, I've got to admit. But But then there's a whole sequence where you mention where they take the movie down like alternative paths where it could go, and there's one that ends with Grumpy Cat in an animal shelter, and the last scene you see is Grumpy Cat secured to a table as a vet lowers a gas mask. And I put the question out to my family and said, who wants to watch Grumpy Cat with me? And both my kids said, we'll watch it, Dad. And then suddenly there's a scene of a cat about to be put down in an animal shelter, and I just went, eh. No! Yeah. That was just way too dark for what the rest of this movie seemed to be aiming at.
Yeah, considering a lot of the time too, like the case of like your kids as well too, a lot of people, like kids of that age too, would be like, oh yeah, I love Grumpy Cat, I want to see this cat in this cute movie, essentially, you know. So being able to, being thrown that concept, and also, you know, some of the Santa Claus stuff as well, you kind of go, yeah, what was this actually aimed at? Was it actually aimed at adults who were going to sit around drinking and taking the piss out of this movie or something? Yeah, it is quite strange. So I felt a couple of things were strange. But I even thought that a lot of those plot changes, or those, you know, how things would have happened, was another attempt at them to pretty much make this piece of fluff into a movie. Like, essentially, I'm surprised that they managed to even be over an hour and 20 minutes long. So I think, thankfully, through all these recreations and how things might have happened, they were able to sort of keep it going a bit longer. But yeah, talk about dragging something out. So, but yeah, too many. Yeah, there were a few scenes like that I thought this was strange. So, do you know offhand what the rating of the film was? It would have been G for sure.
I'm thinking it would have had to have been G. I can't see how it could be. It may have pushed PG because of that animal shelter scene and the fact that there's a few, like, jerks and, you know, those very mild, slightly sweary words scattered throughout. So I think it probably was aimed at that, like, tween audience, I'm guessing. Yeah. The fact that the main girl herself, you know, she was... from what I can gather, she was going to a new school and she was finding it hard to make friends. And there was a sequence at the start with three very obnoxious girls that she knows from school that she's trying to be friends with, and they're just like, just in the most obnoxious way possible.
Yeah. You wanted something bad to happen. You wanted something that the girl to get a revenge on those girls. So I'm glad that, you know, that they weren't left out in the end of the film.
Yeah, let's just say that was probably another moment that I found almost funny, where those three obnoxious girls are going to the trees on Christmas morning, and they're all pulling lumps of coal out of their stockings. And they just went, okay, I'll give it a tick for that. I will give that a point. And it's not quite funny, but it's actually kind of good.
It works, yeah. And I think the thing is, too, I always like when a bad character or character that you go, oh, I could just kill them, you know, I'm glad when they get their comeuppance in the end or something bad happens to them in that respect. I'm not, that's awful, but as a viewer, that's always a good feel, a bit of a yes feeling. So, but, I've always actually going off on a little bit of a tangent, but my whole theory, because I do know that apparently a grumpy cat is a type of cat that has dwarfism or something along those lines. So I've always been a bit funny about the whole grumpy cat in general, because I've thought, are these people, these pretty much the owners are pretty much exploiting this cat and making money out of a cat that has physical deformities. But then I suppose when you think about it, it went viral courtesy of the internet, not through necessarily their own means. So it's always been a weird thing for me. So I always get that feeling that as you're looking at Grumpy Cat's eyes in this movie, he's going, what the hell is happening? What am I doing? It felt very exploitative in that respect. But hey, I'm not saying this is an exploitation film by any means. But yeah, maybe it is. So
yeah, I mean, I guess in a way, I mean, most animal movies, you got to wonder how much the animals really know about what's going on. But if the animals are treated well, and, you know, it's keeping them well fed and well cared for, then I'm perfectly happy with that. But like, when you talk about the animals in this movie, outside of Grumpy Cat, the other animals who you got to hear from time to time weren't really all that special. And I think we could have done with hearing a bit less from the other animals in the pet shop.
Yeah, I thought that they were going to do a lot more with it, and I thought, oh, we got, was it Carl or a snake? I'm like, oh, what an interesting, you know, what an interesting concept, and like, I think it had like this French accent or something like that. But yeah, they always sort of like, it sort of went into look who's talking, territory, and then you kind of like, oh, maybe they realised that wasn't going to be, that's not going to work for us, let's go a different angle. Because I actually think it made it more special when Grumpy Cat was the only, voice you could hear, you know, in terms of the animals. So that was an interesting choice for them to have done, but it is like they threw everything, including the kitchen sink, into this, just trying to appeal to as many different people as possible.
Yeah, I didn't mind it too much, like when they're out in the mall proper, and like the million-dollar dog, well, you know, kept getting away because bumbling crooks, and like it would just, you know, it would say, okay, we're not playing anymore, later. Just this little occasional little thing, just mixing it up. That wasn't too bad, but yeah, when we had like full on conversations between all the animals in the pet store, it's just like, please stop, please,
yeah,
just stop.
Exactly.
Just do more Grumpy and the girl, because really that's the core of this movie. Everything around this relationship between Grumpy Cat and the girl is just filler.
Yeah, look, and while speaking of the girl, I think it was it Audrey Plaza or something. Which is quite funny considering it's set in a shopping mall. Her last name's Plaza, the young girl who played it was Crystal, isn't it?
Yeah, well, because Aubrey Plaza, because she's actually a fairly well-known actor and comedian.
I was going to ask, because I wasn't sure what she was in beforehand.
And she was the voice of Grumpy Cat. Like, she's in, I think she's most known from the show Parks and Recreation.
I see.
It was Megan Charpentier, I believe that's how that's pronounced, who played Crystal.
Okay.
I think a lot of the people in this movie probably are well known for things like Lifetime movie roles.
And I'm thinking, based on some of the, based on this film, I don't know if a lot of them would have got employed again, or if it would necessarily be a good film to be on your resume. But hey, if they're used to doing Lifetime movies, and I know they churn them out. And that's the thing, Trip. I'm thinking about some of the Lifetime films I've seen. They all have that kind of, they're almost a bit tacky in a way. And so in many ways, it probably fitted quite perfectly for Grumpy Cat to be something that they released.
Yeah, I think even there were a few direct references, just like, oh, that's so sappy. Well, it's a Lifetime movie. Oh, that would never happen, except in a Lifetime movie. Oh, look, we're being self-referential again. Laugh at us. No.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it got to the point where you're like, okay, you've done your filler now, move on. But, hey, they wouldn't have a very big movie otherwise. But I did appreciate parts whenever there'd be other characters and, you know, yeah, like Grumpy Cat would be there. That's not my line. It's not my line. Almost like, we don't care about you. And it got to that point because you'd just be like, well, we're watching a Grumpy Cat movie. And when Grumpy Cat wasn't on the screen, you kind of got to the point where you're like, where is he? Kind of bring that back. I don't care about you humans.
Yeah, there's a whole confrontation between the crooks and the extremely young landlord of the plaza, which just went on and on and on because they thought that he was the one that was foiling them. And I mean, I could take that as just like a little side scene because they don't believe that a girl could be foiling them this much, which, yeah, is understandable. It just goes on for too long. It just keeps on going and going, and they dangle him over a balcony, and they tie him up, and they do this, and they do that, and the security guard turns up and goes, what are you doing? It's this little girl! And it's like, yeah, that could have been done in, like, a minute.
Yeah. And it's like what we were saying about how it got sort of a bit heavier for, you know, for example, for the kids and things like that. So it really kind of, it should have just kept that lighthearted tone of, you know, almost a day at the mall, and this is the adventure we had, but it just kept going on, yeah, things that would just take too long to play out. And when you're thinking about it appealing to sort of kids and I suppose, like your kids that, you know, like, yeah, let's watch a Grumpy Cat movie, it's when it starts to lose that kind of fun element, you start to go, yeah, what's really happening with this? But it's like what we said earlier, I don't think it really knew what audience it was appealing to, or if it did, it got it very wrong in a lot of respects. So I don't think...
Yeah, I think the logic behind this movie was, let's make a movie with Grumpy Cat. That'll get us advertising sponsorship.
Yep, and from what I've seen of it, I assume it has not exactly become the legacy that they wanted, and I actually think, I'm assuming Grumpy Cat is still... or thing in some way, but I'd be interested to see if there's been a steady decline since the film came out of the whole Grumpy Cat Limited.
Yeah, well, they are still around. I just got to admit that today, on the day that we're recording this podcast, I may well share it before this podcast comes out, so if anyone is out there confused about the timeline, we record this, we do stuff, we release it, that's how it works. I let you behind the magic of podcasting! Whee!
Don't tell anyone, shh!
It's our secret. But a story came out today that apparently some coffee maker used an image that looked an awfully lot like Grumpy Cat in some of its merchandising. And, yeah, they're currently being sued by Grumpy Cat Limited.
Oh, because it would have been, I think they would have trademarked, yeah, the whole likeness to it and all that other sort of stuff. Yeah. Isn't that interesting, Trevor? Well, it sounds like those people at both... If you're going to be the parents, I suppose, of Grumpy Cat, you would just be as ruthless as you can to try and, you know, keep this phenomenon going. So I wouldn't be surprised if, yeah, they're on to suing people straight away as soon as there's any kind of other use. Next thing they're going to say that we can't have anything using a cat on any advertising because they've copyrighted that as well. It wouldn't surprise me.
Who knows? Well, I know that, look, obviously Grumpy Cat is not the cessation that she once was, so I guess anything that goes out there, which is going to take what little income they're still getting away from them, I guess they're going to fight for it.
Yeah, and I'm like going, I hope this doesn't then inspire other people. I don't really want to see a movie of the Oh My God Goosebumps Girl or anything like that. So I'm kind of hoping that this has kind of shot the whole concept of meme into movie concept. It has shot it to death. So I hope other filmmakers or other viral sensations can learn from this. You know, God, please don't give us like a Corey Worthington documentary. I mean, what is it called? Lifetime show or anything like that. So,
Be the bearer of bad news, Christian. I don't know if you heard about this, but they are making the Emoji Movie.
Oh, what? Oh, no. Why have I suddenly thought they're going to go, it's going to seem like Pixels or something like that, where they kind of go that whole, live action meet. Oh, Trevor, I'm confused and a bit mortified about that.
Yeah. I think the fact that we're talking about everything other than this particular Christmas special is probably a good time for us to head to our final thoughts and wrap up. So, I'm getting the feeling that we've pretty much run out of things to say about Grumpy Cat's worst Christmas ever. So, Christian, in summary, What would you say would be your main impressions and an overall feeling about this heartwarming A Lifetime Christmas special?
I think this is a film that's probably best to stay in the vault, and preferably if that vault's on fire is probably a good idea as well. But look, see it for interest's sake if you're into the whole Grumpy Cat thing, and maybe if you want to see sort of how they make films based on internet sensations. Believe it or not, this must be the only template for one, because it's only the only one that's ever been done. So I see it for curiosity factors, but you know, I would definitely not put it up there as one of the great Christmas movies if you were going to go through a list of them. So see it for interest's sake, but yeah, I won't be watching it again.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I think this movie really has that whole thing that movies that deliberately set out to try to get that so bad it's good feeling, like they're actually striving for it, they rarely, rarely succeed. And this is probably a prime example of, hey, we know we're making a bad movie, let's make it all fun and make fun of the fact that it's bad, because that'll be funny and get people interested. No, it won't. It did seem to me much longer than its 85-minute runtime. I saw that 85 minutes just went, okay, this, I should just be able to survive this. It's still going. Why is it still going? And it keeps asking me, why am I still watching it? And I'm asking myself, why am I still watching it? But I have to watch it because I'm watching it for a podcast, and why won't it end?
We've only got to get it to the end.
Yep.
Interested to know, Trevor, after, you know, obviously getting past a couple of scenes that were a bit, how was the family response to the film? Did the kids end up enjoying it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was only me and my two boys, my wife, Susie, for those of you who have listened to the podcast, she has been on as a guest. She refused to watch it. Absolutely.
I can see her saying
nope, no. Nope, not doing it. Both of them said that it was a horrible movie, and my eldest, Josh, said he would give it a 1 out of 10.
And hey, I think kids are—they're the critics today, so I think they're worth listening to. So there you go. I think that 1 out of 10, yeah, sounds pretty accurate.
and given what I think the demographic was, Josh is basically within that particular demographic that I think it was aimed at, but mind you, the whole tone itself went in such different ways. I still don't know exactly who this was meant to be for, but it's safe to say I don't think it is for anyone who wants to watch a decent movie.
Exactly, or a decent Christmas movie. There's absolutely heaps of other ones. If you want to have a Christmas binge movie watch, don't. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about this one. There's plenty of other ones out there. Don't even give it a go for it's so bad it's a good thing, because it's really, it's so bad it's referential. That's pretty much all I can think of.
So, absolutely. And even if you're a fan of Grumpy Cat, because I'll admit, I laughed at the memes quite a bit. There were some good ones out there.
Yeah.
This is nowhere near even the most mediocre of the old Grumpy Cat memes. It's got a couple of moments that you can kind of enjoy, but yeah, it doesn't really get to the point where it's like you actually find yourself enjoying yourself.
So I think our thoughts on this film is pretty unanimous.
Absolutely. This for a Christmas movie, I give this a resounding bah humbug.
And I finished that off with a mow, a really long drawn out mow. And for those of you who have seen the movie, you will hear that quite a lot.
Absolutely. However, Christian, there's people out there that like this movie.
Oh, wow. I was waiting for this, and I'm quite shocked, but interested to hear what their angle is.
Yeah, well, what I've got here is a review with the title Grumpy's Worst Christmas. Loved it! This.
Sorry, they have to have done it in that voice, of course.
I'm just imagining it. The way they've used capitals and exclamation marks, that's pretty much how I imagine it. This movie was funny and Grumpy was adorable, as expected. I really enjoyed the humour and the way the movie poked fun at itself, the phenomenon of Grumpy Cat and Lifetime movies in general. I thought the acting was very good, especially by the actress that played Crystal and the two actors playing the rock star dog thieves. The Voice of Grumpy by Aubrey Plaza grew on me after a few minutes. Kind of monotone, but I think she made it work. Grumpy, brackets, tartar sauce, is beautiful. Just being her adorable, grumpy self. I love her face. I'm thinking there will be a sequel, and I'll definitely be watching. Five no. stars.
No, no sequel. Oh, God. Oh, well, interesting to see there's fans out there, but I don't know, were they watching the same movie as us?
Oh, no, I'm not going to judge them. I'm just going to assume that they were high on Christmas cheer.
That would probably be the only way to get through it, so, but hey, we did it.
We didn't enjoy it, but we got through it.
Yeah, exactly. We were the ones that they created that line. Why are you still watching this? Because we were doing a podcast. We've got no choice.
Yeah, Trevor made us do this. I hate Trevor and I'm him.
Oh, let's hope we can find a more redeemable Christmas special at the end of next year. But I don't know. But there's quite a lot of irredeemable ones out there. But I definitely think this was this was one of the worst. So it lived up to its name.
Absolutely. Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever. It's pretty much the worst. Excellent. Well, on that rather festive, jolly note, we're pretty much coming to the end of our Irredeemable Christmas Special. We hope that you have enjoyed it, and maybe we've inspired you to check out some different Christmas movies. There's a lot out there, some of them good, some of them bad. Yeah, and I'll let you judge the rest for yourself. I'll listen until we get to talk about them next year.
I can't wait. Well, thank you so much for all the challenges this year, Trevor, and thanks to any listeners who have suggested some titles and have also come on board, and a couple of people that have helped us with joint redeeming features. And yeah, it's been fun, Trevor, and I'm really excited to see what movies are going to come out in 2016, because trust me, there's already a list on my end, and you're not getting out of it that easily.
I am worried, but looking forward to it. And of course, if anyone out there, if you think that we have been too harsh on poor Grumpy Cat, if you think we've been too generous, in fact, any of the movies that we've looked at over the past 12 months, if you haven't heard too many redeeming features, please head back through our backlog and pick some movies out. There's definitely a very interesting range. We would also love to hear from you if you have any movies that you think you would like us to try to redeem. Maybe you have a guilty pleasure that no one else seems to like. Maybe we can help you win your arguments next time around. Or if you have a challenge of us of a movie that you think is completely irredeemable, we're ready for it. Bring it on.
Because I think after some of the stuff we've watched, Trevor, I think we've already watched most of the worst things ever made. So I think we're ready for anything.
Yeah, I would love to agree with you, Christian, but I get the feeling that I would regret saying that.
Let's see what happens next year then.
Absolutely. So if you would like to get in touch with us, you can easily find The Rufus Project on Twitter and Facebook. You can write to us at therufusproject@gmail.com. You can head to our homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com, and leave comments below this very episode. We will be back in mid to late January with our mini-podcast and our redeeming features ready to go again. However, in the meantime, I would like to wish everyone out there an enjoyable and safe holiday period, and really enjoy it however you want to enjoy it. Okay?
Here, I second that. Thank you, listeners. Have a very Merry Christmas, and the same to you, Trevor, to you and your family. Thanks for the laughs and the podcast this year. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to 2016.
It's going to be a big one. Well, thank you very much, Christian.
Thanks, Trevor. Looking forward to it.